Welcome to Lilydale Radio, featuring topics about spiritualism, mediumship, healing, spirituality, and the Lilydale Assembly, the world's largest center for the religion, philosophy, and science of spiritualism. This is Lilydale Radio.
There's a special ingredient that all chefs know to add to their food. We're going to talk about that special ingredient on today's show, as well as many other aspects relating to nurturing people through food and the divine experiences that can happen when we transcend this normal existence of the physical. On today's Wednesday Favilla podcast, where we'll be talking about the spiritual essence of food. So those of you who are just joining me for the first time, this is Wednesdays with Willa, and this is my weekly podcast show that airs live on my Facebook page, Willa White Medium. I am your host, Willa White, and this is my spiritual conversation that I have with different guests. We have various topics that we cover. It can be about spiritualism, mediumship, healing, faith, family, and more. And I'm also part of the Lilydale Radio family, so you can tune in to this on blogtalkradio.com/lilydaleradio, and there are other shows throughout the week that you can tune into that are related to spiritualism and spiritual topics. So I encourage you to take a look at those. For those who are understanding, wanting to understand more about Lilydale Assembly, you can go to the lilydaleassembly.org website. In fact, they'll be posting in the coming months the various summer program workshops and events. Lilydale is a special community that is in southwestern New York State, about an hour south of Buffalo, New York. And we have a beautiful array of programs of lectures, mediumship, and healing, and workshops. So I encourage you to take a look at the website, lilydaleassembly.org, and also the printed catalog will be available soon, so you can email the Lilydale Assembly office if you'd like a paper copy. All right. Without further ado, I'd like to introduce my special guest, Jessamine Daly Griffin. Thanks for being here today, Jessamine.
Good morning.
Jessamine and I have been friends for many years now. I was trying to do the calculations. I think it must be about 12 years now that we met in a women's circle, and we've been friends ever since, and it's been wonderful to connect at different points over the years. And Jessamine is an amazing woman with a bright spirit, a radiant soul. When people meet her, they immediately feel that warmth, and that is something that gets into her food, because she is the owner of Om Yom Gluten-Free Bake Shop and Cafe, which is a beautiful building that's in Fredonia, New York, which is about, I would say, about 10, 15 minutes away from Lilydale. And it's definitely specialty food, but anybody could probably eat it because it's delicious, even if you don't have gluten-free needs. And it's something that you can feel the warmth of the food as it enters your very body and being. So I highly recommend it. Now, Jessamine has been featured in a couple of different ways. She is the 2018 recipient of the Ignite Buffalo Award, and also featured on Small Business Revolution, which is a wonderful program that really helps to infuse ideas and money and assistance to various small businesses in towns across the United States, I believe. And it's something that I'm glad Jessamine was a winner of, as it were, a person who could receive the benefit of that guidance. In today's program, we're going to be talking about the spiritual essence of food. That's our topic, that soul that goes into the food, but also the resulting understanding of the divine showing up in the life as you build a business and as you nurture people. So, Jessamine, let's talk about that today.
Great. I'd love to talk about this. I think that in deciding to open a business that is such a different or a niche business necessarily, with developing a dedicated gluten-free bakery. You know, people thought that that was really crazy. but I was doing it for a reason. It wasn't because my whole life I wanted to own a bakery. And it definitely wasn't because I ever thought I would learn how to bake gluten-free. But our children bring us gifts with them that teach us things we never expect when we raise children. And raising my children meant that I needed to learn to cook gluten-free. And so I just kind of tried to open my mind and be willing to learn new things. And in doing so, I found that there were many other people who had this need. I really just didn't know anything about it 15 years ago. But as I met these people, I realized there's each one is like a little pocket of isolation in their home feeding themselves. And I really started to see in my own children how much they couldn't partake in the shared experiences that we always have with food. And that nurturance and that sharing is such a part of daily life and such a part of every family. And yet these specific people were left out of that, not by any intention, but because they had a medical need. And so in my heart, I just wanted to do something about that. So I never went back to teaching after I had kids. I goofed around as a what I call a pretend waitress at my friend's restaurant, the original mustard seed in South Dayton, with the original owners, and had the opportunity to serve people there in a great group of women. We had a lot of fun. But during that time, as I developed the GF recipes, you know, I started to share the foods with the restaurant because there were people that came who also needed this food. And so it really just kind of grew. And then from there, we added Lucy's Coffee Shop in Lilydale.
Yes.
And then, yes, and then other multiple restaurants from the area would come to me. People started ordering, and I realized, oh, my gosh, this is so much bigger than I ever anticipated. And so when I left the restaurant, I continued to serve restaurants on the side, but I really drove myself to the farmer's market. That's where I felt like that was where our real community was, where I could really reach a lot of people, especially because at Fredonia Farmer's Market, we can serve people who have food stamps and senior nutrition checks. And so we were able to, you know, to serve all of these people, and it just exploded. I mean, people, to see a cultural shift happen where people are afraid to try a new food that's called gluten-free, to the point where within a few years, you know, we have people lining up and they don't even know what they want. They just know they want something. So they're coming to us for this, what my mom calls the golden transaction. It's not really as much about the food. It's about our relationship. We've developed a relationship with all these people we serve. I sit up and I look around the filled market and I can say almost every person's name. And the bread brought me that gift. It wasn't something that I sought out. It just happened because this connection, this bread was the thread that brought our community together in a way that we are taking care of people who have a specific medical need and bringing them back into the fold.
Yeah.
Because all the people are eating this food. It's not just the gluten-free people who have medical needs eating this food.
Oh, yeah. I don't have gluten-free needs, and I love it.
Wanted to see. It's feeding the unfed, right? Which was my goal. But when I say unfed, I mean unfed in a lot of ways. I'm not just talking about the food you put in your mouth, but it's that sharing around the table that happens that I wanted to bring back for these people, you know, because I care deeply about the experiences of children growing up in this way. And I care deeply about the 85-year-olds who have experienced it their whole life and never found a way to be together with people in this way. Some of the most profound experiences I had were at this restaurant, at my friend's restaurant. I remember serving a man who was almost 90, and it was his birthday, and I had made bread that he could eat and his dessert. And at the end of the meal, he said he hadn't had cake in like 20 years. I said, how are you feeling? And he said, I'm scared. And I said, why? And he said, I'm afraid that you don't know what you're talking about, and you gave me the wrong food. Because you couldn't believe that the person did something that felt so authentically like what he had grown up with, you know. So what I try to do when I create the food and when I create the recipes is I try to really dig into our ancestral food history, and I try to connect with the spirits of my grandmothers because food was maternal, you know, for so many generations, and that sense of nurturance through feeding. So I try to connect with these people who were before me and have them help me guide the flavors and guide the textures and the experiences so that I can bring something to people that will give them a memory. And so when you eat this food, you know, I hope that aside from just tasting good or feeling good or leaving someone feeling good, that it will also sometimes be more than that, and that they're going to be left with that what just happened feeling. You know, why am I crying, or why am I remembering my grandmother? Like, so many times people will eat our food and they'll start to cry and say all of a sudden they remember their grandmother. And so I don't necessarily tell everybody, I was seeking your grandmother when I made this cake. but it's happening, and it's coming in the layers of food story that we hide in the food. I try to hide the layers, the flavors that are unexpected, but that are very old-fashioned and traditional, so that it will maybe turn on that little light inside their heart when they eat it.
Beautiful.
And not everything gets up there, but I would say the majority of our recipes can take people there.
I would agree, and I do feel that there is that transcendent energy that can permeate through food. I think it's a physical representation of experiencing the soul. It's almost biblical, that understanding of breaking bread and sharing with each other, the Jesus Christ consciousness that is shared with people. But it's a universal expression of we are gathering together, and this is a holy or sacred experience that can come from that. And I love that you know on a deep level that food can evoke memory, but can also evoke, to some extent, mediumship. It can happen where they felt their grandmother, not just because of a nostalgia moment, but because they were able to tune into that particular vibrational frequency and break through barriers.
Exactly. That's how I feel. I mean, you see a person take a bite of something and immediately they're having these feelings. It's thrilling to be able to bring that to somebody and just kind of say, oh, good. I'm so glad that happened for you, because that happened to me too.
And don't you feel, especially those people who have had digestive issues or gut issues especially, you know, they need something that is going to relate well with their digestive system so that they can be in that higher power, because there's a chemical shift that happens within people so that they can do higher vibrational spiritual work. And sometimes food definitely plays a role in that body chemistry. And the essence of that food can also play a role in that chemistry to make that happen.
Wow, that's really neat to think about. I've never really thought about it that way. I always, in my mind, I always come back to the scientific principles that our food, so in America, we think of food as scientific, right? So part of what I think about with food being scientific, we think calories, we think healthy fats to keep us warm, we think numbers, we quantify our food experiences. And the scientific part of me thinks, yes, part of life is quantification, right? We quantify our experiences because we can relate to that very narrow way of thinking. It keeps us in the safe bubble. And yet, I don't think, and some people might disagree with me, but I think that that's actually a very patriarchal model. And so, like, the yang in me says, okay, the mom in me, the yin in me, the woman of generations of women who fed people, I recognize that food is so much more profound than that, and our shared eating experiences are so, the maternal aspect of that is this fluid movement, right? And this, so yes, while we eat the calorie, it then becomes the cell. But that's not disconnected from it creating this group of cells that then becomes the vessel for our spiritual experience, you know, and that when we can take care of ourselves and try to take care of our body as best we can, having the privilege to do that means that hopefully we feel good enough that we can be creative too, and that we can have some really special experiences outside of just having to think of the next thing.
That's true.
You know, leaving us a little bit more able to become open to what else the world has to offer us when we're feeling good and when we're feeling safe, when we're feeling nurtured. And food connects us that way, not just within our own body, but I feel like it connects us with each other. And I believe that that's why people keep coming back. You know, people say to me all the time, they laugh, they're like, Jessamine, you always have a line. And I'm like, really? I don't... Because I get a sense that there's other people that I need to speak to, but when I'm talking to a person about what their needs are when they're at my table, I feel directly just like I'm with that person and I want to be present with them. And it's a good feeling. I feel like it's therapy for me to get to be present with the person for a couple minutes. Each time, over, every time.
Well, that's something that is so beautiful about what you do, Jessamine, not just with food, but with your essence. You very much are aware of seeing the sacred in another person and speaking to that soul rather than just the exterior of that person and the surface level of a person. You go into the deep level very quickly with people in that nurturing, beautiful way that you have. And, you know, when we were preparing for this show, I was thinking about some of those great movies, like Water for Chocolate. You know, remember that movie? Like Water for Chocolate. And when she cried, the tears went into the food, and then all the wedding guests cried. And when she was happy, everybody was like, wow. They could feel it. Or there's that movie, the other one about this, it's called Chocolat, right? Of course, you got to have chocolate. And then that's that French movie, and when people taste it, they could feel a different essence. And I think that is important that we think in terms of what are we putting into our mouths and into our bodies and what intention. It's one of the reasons why table grace can be so important to kind of transcend and put an energy of transfusion of the sacred into the experience, the divine connection that we can have of gratitude and food that goes into it. And so it's very, very special. And I think, Jessamine, it would be wonderful. Tell, because you've had some really unique experiences in the development of your particular business that have been really exciting. And I think it'd be great for you to share some of your inspirational stories as a small business and what has happened with the divine working in your life, in, through your food, absolutely, but then in your life to make that food happen.
Wonderful. I'd love to talk about this. It's funny, though, speaking of like Water for Chocolate,
I always
love that teenager. Yeah, and I read the book as a woman, and I love Laura Esquivel, and I always thought, like, wouldn't it be cool if that could really happen for people? This was what I used to think many years ago. And then one day I realized, oh, Laura Esquivel knew what she was talking about. This must be happening for her, and that's why she wrote the book, because I think that we have a little bit of that happening for us. You know, I just didn't realize. And so one day I was trying to be careful because we were having a tearful moment in the kitchen. This was recently. And a friend and I were working together, and we were sharing experiences of a couple of our children that had miscarried, right? So we both had this shared miscarriage experience, and our children were born too soon, and they didn't live. And it was a morning where we were having just this very spirited talk while we were cooking, and I realized at one point we were both crying, and we were making snickerdoodles, and we were hugging, and I was like, oh, I hope that this batch of snickerdoodles doesn't make everybody you and now cry. But I thought, if it does, it's also going to make them feel warm, like a hug, so it'll be okay, because we're helping each other get through this time together, you know? So we definitely, we do have those moments, and sometimes, most often, I hope that the feelings that go into the food are good. But sometimes I think they're going to be feelings like, oh, we need support, but we can get it. You know?
Right. I think you're right to mention that, that it's not always about feeling good in that sense.
Right.
There has to be that understanding of the ebb and flow of life, and that sometimes we use food to get us through a moment. How often has someone said, oh, you're not feeling well, I'm going to make this for you, or here's a get well
right.
food, or have this cookie, it'll make you feel better. But there's also the understanding that sometimes we have to go ahead and enter into the pain and then move
yes.
through it.
Yeah, and when we can do that together, you know, it's so much easier. And to recognize that it can happen, you know, even over cookies in a bakery. And I just hope that if we did put that moving through feeling into the cookies, that everybody that got it maybe had someone to help them move through whatever came to them through that day.
But I think there's the gratitude for the cook that also has to happen in that sense of supporting the person who's making the food. We can't just take and eat without that understanding of where it's come from and the different sources of things that it's been processed through, right? That is part of that, and there's an awareness. And before we get into the stories you have, I have had some people who are very sensitive in my family and my friends that when they eat foods, they can actually feel, sometimes they'll have good dreams or bad dreams because of where the food came from somehow. So there's an interesting connection that some people can make. And some people would say that's the imagination working overtime, and other people would say that is a sensitivity or responsiveness to what has gone before and feeling it on a deeper level.
It can definitely make you feel cautious to go out to restaurants, I think. Unless you get a really good feeling about the place and you know the cook's not crabby.
I know.
I'm like, I kind of want to know who's cooking the food, please.
Yes, may I meet the chef?
Yeah,
especially in the day and age of all these different cooking shows that are out there, right? You've got all these people who are stressing over food or they're in a glorious mode. Like, it depends. Some people are in their grace about it. But then
right.
when you have titles called Hell's Kitchen, like
that. Right? Yeah, I don't really want to eat that. I'll stick with the farmer's market where the cooks are all in the spirit of health, right? That's a good, yeah.
Yes, and there's that spirit of community that is always
right.
present, always present.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
It just permeates every interaction. So speaking of spirit of support and health, this year has been especially interesting owning a business, right?
Oh, yeah.
During the first global pandemic of our lives, of our generation. So I think that one of the special things that I've learned this year is that, or I've been reminded of, is that it's okay to not know everything and it's okay to seek help, right? And that when we do, help is there for us. We just have to kind of open up a little bit to it. So I'd like to take you through a series of some really incredible experiences that have happened through our bakery during this pandemic year. And the first one, I started thinking about it last night. When was the first really profound experience? And I realized it was right when COVID first struck our area that we knew of. And the world shut down. And of course, everyone in my house got sick. And we found out late, I mean, this was before we could get testing. But we found out later that we'd had a couple of positive exposures through customers at the bakery, and so we were pretty sure what we had was COVID. And we had the yuckies for quite a while, and the high fevers, and all everything, like all the symptoms that you hear about that stretch on some of them for 6 weeks. You know, we had it all. But we made it through. But during that time, as all the colleges shut down, and then the restaurants had to shut to low capacity, and then they had to close altogether, and then the schools shut, and it was all within that week. And I was laying in bed with a fever, and I just didn't know what to do. I felt it felt like the warmth of hands on my back. And I remember that, and I got up and I came downstairs, and in the feverish fog, I sat on the corner of my couch, and I had paper and a pen, and I started to write, and all of a sudden, I had this whole thought series of how to survive as a business during the pandemic, and it was like a 3-page, million-word business plan modification that I had never thought of. It just came to me in a fever. It was incredible. So I wrote it down, and I knew that once I got better, I would just start putting it into action. Start with page one. Look at my numbers. Move on to page two if needed. Look at my numbers. And then we were able to proceed. And as I watched the other businesses around me struggling and closing permanently, I felt so sorry because it could be any of us, you know? And yet I felt somehow like I received the guidance for how to proceed. It wasn't just that I had Small Business Revolution help. That was part of it. But I also felt like I was being led to know what to do. And so what I've done wasn't always popular. I closed our cafe. I mean, it's there, it sits there with my kids in the dining room homeschooling while I cook in the kitchen and prepare for market and for porch pickup, but it's not open yet, and people don't understand why, and I say, it's complicated, but the most important part for you to know is that I don't know when the time is right yet, and so I'm seeking when the time will be right, and when I know, I'll let you know.
Right. When your soul tells you when it's the right time. And I think it's I just want to take people back to that moment when you were in the fever, and if that was basically like a trance state that you had entered into. Unfortunately, fevers can do that. But I think that going into that kind of light trance mode, there is a sense of going into that guidance. And that guidance mode where you get a download from spirit, from the universe, that then helps you in your life that you may not have been allowing in a conscious way before, or had blocks, mental blocks that you put up. But at that time, you just were, everything was occupied trying to keep you in out of the fog, as it were. And so it babysits that side of the brain, as it were, and then you're able to receive the download. And other people can do that too. Yes, yes.
It would be nice to not need a fever to get there.
You don't need a fever.
Yeah, maybe we can find it in meditation. Well, I have some experiences with that as well. The next really neat experience that has helped our business survive was that in the next few weeks there, one night I was awake all night doing the planning thing, you know, like how we do once in a while, and trying to figure out, okay, if I was to quantify this, exactly what is my number for survival? So for doing these porch pickups, I need to know exactly how much money I have to make every week in order to do my most basic, overhead for the building and to purchase supplies. And the next morning, a person who's a local financial guy, Larry Fiorella, we all love him at the market, sent me a template that he made up for how to do that. And I was like, Larry, how did this come to be? Because last night I spent the whole night trying to figure out my numbers, and you gave me this template, and it had a couple things that I hadn't thought of, and now I have my exact number. Like, thank you so much. And here's the funny thing. So every week, we've come in at almost that exact number. We're talking about a year, right? I can't believe that this is a coincidence. I know that we are receiving health. We had weeks where we were way different from the number, and I would go out to check the mail, and there would be an envelope in cash that brought us to the number. That happened multiple times from anonymous sources. Why did this person feel the generosity and the need to do that for us at that moment? I don't know. I was so grateful. I dropped to my knees and cried and prayed in the bakery. I couldn't believe it. But it happening multiple times helped me get to this place where the fear just dissipated, because I felt like, if I'm supposed to do this, if I'm supposed to survive, then I will, as long as I keep doing what I need to do for these people. I had a week where all of a sudden I got this, you know, well, one week I couldn't bake at all, and because I had a thing with my neck. But the very next week I ended up getting an order for the local hospital that was grant funded for the same amount of money that would have been the previous week's total. And sometimes we're off by a dollar. Sometimes we're over it by a few hundred, but we're never under it. So we're surviving, and it's because we're getting this help. More profoundly, though, has been the sourcing of our ingredients. So those are the quantifications. Those are the how I figured out how to survive as a business, and I really did need that help. But during the pandemic, we all remember the difficulties with finding things that we needed or ingredients. As a gluten-free bakery, that became so profound because the warehouses were just depleted. And once you get rid of all the grain that was harvested for the year, there isn't more until they farm it and they mill it and they ship it to the warehouses. I mean, that's it. So I spent the majority of last year scouring the country online for warehouses that might have one or two bags of this or that flour. As a GF bakery, we use about 15 different types of certified GF flours to make our blends. So, because you can't just like replace, it's not like wheat flour, it's very different. So I would spend every night, I would be looking around and trying to find these things. And we had people in Florida looking for us and people in Minnesota looking for us. And all the sweeties from Deluxe were trying to find it. I mean, nobody could find it, right? Like, it's just what it was. And so I watched our supplies dwindle. And about 2 or 3 months into the pandemic, we were down to 16 boxes of flour. And I went in for bread baking day, and I had about 30 people that I was making food for their families. And so I made about 65 pounds of dough that day, which is plenty of flour that I was opening and using, opening these boxes and using as the day went on. And then partway through the day, I overproofed a batch, which means that the bread is going to fall and collapse, and you can't really use it for bread. You can make croutons or whatever with it. And I was so heartbroken because I knew that that meant if I had to restart, I was essentially going to run us out of our flour, and then I wouldn't be able to cook for people until we could get more. And at that point, our favorite mill, Bob's Red Mill, was looking towards July or September for these flours. So I thought, that's going to be it, you know. And so I just kind of dropped down on my knees in the kitchen, and I tried to seek my grandma Schaefer, because I feel like she's one of the women who was amazing and remarkable in her life, and she was always feeding people through their church, and she was just amazing. She was so frugal. She was clever. She was able to stretch food and a dollar like nobody else. And I just was saying, like, what am I missing? What am I missing? How can I do this? And the bread that I overproofed ended up not falling, which, first of all, might not seem like a miracle to some people, but when you're looking at 20 pounds of bread in one oven failing and then all of a sudden it works, that felt great.
That's a hallelujah moment.
Straight up hallelujah moment. But then I went into the back once I realized the bread was going to be okay, and I thought, okay, I don't have to make it again. So now I'm going to count my boxes of flour, because I've been opening these boxes all day long, making all this bread, and I need to see how much I have left. And I counted the boxes, and there were 15. And I thought, this is not possible. I started the day with 16. I made 65 pounds worth of dough. I opened box after box after box. I was looking at boxes here on the floor. how are there 15 boxes of flour? I don't understand. And I started to shake, and I went back in the kitchen, and there was a box of flour unopened on the counter, like where I had just been. There were 16 boxes. The only other person in the building was my mother. She and I looked at each other, and we just started to shake and cry, like we couldn't believe it. It was honestly like the stories you hear, you know, in the old books, like, and in the Bible. I mean, it was like the oil, or it was like,
yeah,
you know, Tante Golda's potato bin on Hanukkah. It was, you know, it was the manna. It was like, in a pandemic, I'm the only person in this area that is making food for these people. They can't access it at the stores. I'm running out of ingredients. And all of a sudden, we are replenished with the same amount that we started the day with. And I can go another week and another week. And it went on for weeks that 16 boxes of flour lasted. It was just unbelievable. And people who don't believe might think that I'm crazy, but I'm telling you what, I had a minor in science in college, and I was a teaching student, so I know how to count to 16. And I know that those boxes, there were 16 boxes, and then there were 16 boxes again. So, I mean, wow, I was just so grateful.
Oh.
But it went on from there. I mean, these things just started happening, and we started seeing it happen. As time went by, as the months went by, all of our next sources of flour ran out. We did eventually run through those last 16 boxes, except for the final bag, which I saved in the basement as a kind of a tribute. It's on my counter because I feel like I can't use that flour for some reason. I'm not sure why. I need it as a reminder. And I knew that I became able to start sourcing other types of gluten-free flour that we didn't use to source. And I thought, okay, if I can start to develop some new recipes, maybe I can make a new kind of bread. So there was a period in there of maybe 2 or 3 weeks where we weren't able to serve any bread to people. And we continued to offer some of our other things at market. And people understood. They knew. They couldn't get it either, you know. So I started to work at it, and I was working through all these ratios and doing all my gluten-free math that I do, small batches, scaling large batches. I just couldn't make anything that was worth eating that also felt nutritious. Made a lot of hockey pucks, a lot of dog treats, a lot of compost, a lot of bread. You can only make so many breadcrumbs. But I spent a lot of time praying about it and thinking about it too. And one night in the middle of the night, all of a sudden I just sat up out of the sleep and turned the light on and pulled my notebook out from under the pillow and started to write. And a new ratio came into my hands that I had just never considered or never thought of. And my husband Jeremy looked over and he was like, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm writing another ratio." And he said, "Can't wait till morning." You know, what are the practical implications of having somebody who's a seeking spirit? It's not great for the other people in the house.
True.
And I actually got 2 new ratios that night. And so I went into work the next day and I gave it a shot. And out of the last one that was our number 12, we got the best bread that we had ever even developed, and that's what we call our perseverance loaf. So all of the people who are familiar with Om Nam know that that's where perseverance came from. And it also works in many of our other applications that we need maybe a half a cup of flour or a quarter cup of flour. Perseverance became our new go-to, our new base bread for everything. And by this time in the market, people grew accustomed to our newer variations, you know, the variations in what we were able to serve each week. We've had to change from week to week based on what we can source. And so moving forward, we would run out of things like baking powder. And so then you can't source baking powder. So then we had to make our own baking powder. And then we couldn't get yeast. So we eked out our yeast. And again, it was like the flour. It just kept lasting. We finally got a case of yeast in about November. We were able to get a case of gloves about 8 months after the pandemic started. So that was great. You know, all these little snippets of things that we feel like are going to lead us back towards normal life. But then something came on with our family, and that was that my mom got very sick. She was diagnosed with cancer. She needed to go get this incredible, miraculous medical procedure where they reconstruct your entire digestive system. But that requires a new diet, and it's called the Whipple diet. And that, I had never heard of it, means that people need to eat high protein and low insoluble fiber. They can have moderate soluble fiber and moderate carbohydrates. So it's a very quantified diet through the healing process. And so I really wanted to make a bread that my mom could eat because the perseverance wasn't that.
Right.
And then I started getting calls from other people. I got a call from Olean Hospital from a nurse there about a child who had very limited food needs. A local regular customer whose body wasn't doing well with the perseverance bread, another one. And then another one, a local teen who was going through this allergy process with Children's Hospital, and the bread didn't work for them either. And, you know, it was like all of these other people started coming up and imploring me, like, is there something that you can make for me? And so I set my heart on that. So one night during a meditation, I started thinking about my grandpa. He was a Methodist minister. So my grandpa and Grandma Schaefer were wonderful. And I started thinking about when Grandpa was later in life, once he got his calling to his ministry, and questions about my own life. I'm a Unitarian Universalist, and so I do, you know, I do feel like spirit is with me a lot, but I can't necessarily name it, you know.
You are allowed to, by the way, if you want to.
Yeah, so I don't know what it is, you know. And I thought about what led me to this. Why did I decide to do this? I feel like this is my mission work, you know. And all of I was thinking about these people that I wanted to feed who I wasn't able to feed, and all of a sudden the phrase came into my head. It was always the body. And I visualized this loaf of bread. And as you said, the concept of communion, the breaking of bread, the body, it all kind of came full circle. And I realized I needed this communion item where all people could gather. And how the food that we take into ourselves becomes like this vessel to embody our spirit,
yeah.
You know, and how there's there's no disconnection between those things, right? Even though we think of them as separate, and that me humbly making this food means that I can, like, seek that spirit cycle in any person that I serve, and just how I was honored to be able to do that, and how I really wanted to just keep doing it to assist their ability to speak and to commune together and to have that shared nurturance. And so I thought to myself, like, if I ask for help and I keep trying, as long as I can find the flour, I'll make the bread. And so that became my mantra for the pandemic. As long as I can find the flour, I'll make the bread. And I'm just going to continue to seek to serve these people. And I immediately sat up out of meditation and in the dark had a recipe in my head using one of those ratios that I had come up with before. And it was so different than any gluten-free bread recipe I've ever used. So different, the way that it comes together. It looks different than any of my other breads in the making. I never would have thought of doing it. And yet, I wrote this down, and the next day, it was after mom's surgery, before her treatment, I was like, hey, you want to go into the bakery? And so she said, yeah, it was like a sunny day, and I picked her up, and we drove into town, and I got her set up in the dining room with a cup of coffee, and she had the kids out there chatting with her, and they were folding cake boxes, and so I went into the kitchen, and I got the yeast bubbling in the mixer, and I put my hands on it, and I said a little prayer over it. And I just started putting these ingredients together in this new way. And what came out of it was just this beautiful bread that now met the needs of the Whipple diet, now met the needs of this child in Olean, now met the needs of this other woman who had the changes, now met the needs of this teen with the allergies, and all, you know, all of these other people who had been coming to me for something different. And so I just was thrilled. I was like, okay, we seek and we find. Here it is. Because I had the support. I put a lot of the time and the effort in. It wasn't like I didn't have to try, you know, but there it was. And so we named that bread our union bread. And so when people say to me at market very casually, what's the difference between perseverance and union? I say, well, how much time do you have? Perseverance is a medium multigrain that comes out of the spirit of not giving up. And union is a lighter, more traditional, almost like an old-fashioned country white, but it brings people together who normally can't be brought together into a union. So what are you going for with your meal?
That's great. There's a spiritual connotation to the food that you've been creating, and you can see how much you've been working with the divine and being inspired in those moments. And I think the big takeaway for people today, listening to your stories, is that they can allow themselves to be inspired in everyday circumstances and know that miracles show up, miracles of belief, and miracles of spiritual up-leveling in those moments, and that you can receive those downloads, and then it's what you decide to do with that download, that you say, I'm going to do this of service to other people. I am going to make sure that this is something that will uplift and sustain them through this next phase. Oh,
that's right.
I love it.
And I love that relationship with people. I'm so honored to be able to do what I call the humble act of making someone's daily bread, because this is what it's about. It's about those experiences I had and how they've helped me during a world trauma, you know, to be able to serve people in really specific ways. And I couldn't do it alone. I mean, my friends, my family, they're all there lifting the wings too. Even the people who have helped my business grow, the corporations who wanted to get in on that and say, yeah, let's support these people. But honestly, these divine threads, I see them, and they relieved my fear.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of fear, but these divine threads, my fear is relieved. And yes, I work so hard to make it all work, but I'm not alone trying to make it work. You know, my needs are always being met. It's like I have such gratitude, and so to all of the people who come to us, I'm so grateful to be able to serve you. That's why I do this. You know, it's not about making a buck. It's not about getting an income. And I tried to tell Small Business Revolution that. It's a much bigger thing. And someday, you know, if an income comes out of it, yeah, great, awesome. But this is my mission, is to get these people back into the fold. And I know it's what I'm supposed to do because that's what I'm getting the guidance to do. So, you know, I'm just so glad to be part of the cycle.
Oh, it's so beautiful to see that guidance and that support. And when you really give yourself over to that safety net of the universe, you say, universe, I have no idea how I'm going to get this done. Please show up. I'm going to let go and let God. And then these things come in. And isn't it wonderful how, you know, we can hit our head against the walls of what's going on. And then when we let go and let God, there's this majesty in the moment, in that mess, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We give over to it. And then here you are making these amazing formulas. Like a scientist, like the inventor that gets the download of how to make a machine work, but you're having this how to make the food work.
Yeah.
And I think anybody who is listening and tuning into the show or maybe catching this months later down the road will still feel the essence of that inspiration. That spiritual essence of creation of food and creation of connection with the source that you so much embody in your work and in your person. It's so beautiful. So very beautiful.
And I just have to say, the friends who've come through to lift us through this time, you know, as Mom had to transition out of work, our dear friends, they came from Fredonia Farmers Market. These are our market people.
Yeah.
Our people are so real and so regular that we lift each other up through the hardest times. And I'm just so thankful to be a part of that community. you know, and then I've got another buddy who owns a business, and we meditate on Zoom regularly because we can't really be together as people in person. So we'll do these distance meditations, and it's like, okay, these are some of the times where I'm getting these feelings or these messages or this information, and it's because I'm supported in the actual grunt work of what I have to do. I've got enough people doing that with me, and then I'm also supported in this spirit opening that I'm trying to do, and it's all just coming together, you know? So I guess we can thank the pandemic for that. You know, it brought us just a real affirmation that maybe we're doing what we're supposed to be doing.
Absolutely. And you are a quintessential example of how it's not about what happens to you that dictates the event. It's how you, what attitude you're bringing to it. You understand? It's not about what happens to you. It's what you are allowing yourself to envision and explore in those moments spiritually.
And I think that comes from my mama. Anybody who knows Kathy Schaefer knows that.
Yes.
Every conversation is a practice of that with mom. So, yes.
It helps that you've been raised in that understanding and that mindset, because it helps you to engage in a spiritual conversation with the source, with the mother, and then also with the source, right? And that it teaches other people that they can do that, even if they didn't have a mother like you. Like my mother's that same way. That spiritual conversation, that deepness. You and I are both blessed with moms, and my father's beautiful as well. But there's that understanding of anybody can reach that, even if you haven't had that kind of level of support in your life prior. You can certainly reach that if you engage in a true spiritual conversation with your soul and with other people, and to see them as souls as you interact with them. It makes a huge difference in how things unfold in your life and how you interpret the events. People are asking again about the bakery. The bakery is Om Yom Bakery, and it's located in Fredonia, New York. And, of course, I'll have the link to Jessamine's Bakery so you can check it out and you know, if you're local, place some orders. I don't know if you can ship farther out, or if you're doing what you can to just meet the needs locally. But
I've shipped a few things. We've got a couple things that ship well. Our giant coffee cakes, some of our oat bars, and our granolas all ship well.
Yeah.
But you know, shipping is always kind of expensive.
Sure.
So I caution people because of, you know, it can be cost prohibitive for
right.
people.
You got to really want it at that point. But, you know, when people are back into traveling and when things are opening up, and we hope that sooner rather than later, cross our fingers, certainly Jessamine is such a delightful soul, as you can all see. And I really appreciate the fact that you have put on that space, you've entered in that space of spiritual courage, right, to meet what's going on with you. You may have your concerns and your fears, but you put those aside and move into that state of communion with your soul to get the true answers on how to proceed, and to know that the divine is always going to show up in your life, that the whole universe is conspiring for your greater good so that you can help and serve other people. And this is a good time for everybody to be supporting small businesses like Jessamine's, like, you know, other small businesses that may be in your area, to support them through this time and to understand how you can be an angel to someone else, and so that they can support other people.
Yes, I think a really special thing that we can all do is know that we can really seek each other out. You know, Americans tend to be very private and isolated, or maybe oversharing on social media. It could go either way. but actually, you know, people who are doing that, I think they're just seeking relationship. And, you know, if we can provide relationship to each other, that's just, you know, find some people that you can connect with if you're feeling afraid. Or find someone you can serve. You know?
Right. Move into that volunteer spirit, as it will take you out of your own fear and session on self.
Yeah, it gives our life meaning, you know,
yeah.
To take care of one another, and in turn, we are cared for. So, you know, if you're feeling under, try to find somebody to serve and find people to connect with. It, you know, it makes all the difference this year. Even if you're meditating with a friend over Zoom.
Yeah.
You know, it counts.
It all counts.
Or take out a neighbor's garbage, whatever it is. You know, the service, it really keeps us connected.
Oh, well, I think people were really inspired by today's show because of you being such a special guest, and I really appreciate you being here today and showing how you are really, you know, while you're feeding people, you're also feeding their souls. You know, you're not just feeding their stomachs and what they need on a digestive level, but also what they need on a spiritual digestive level. You know, there's that other energetic body principle that is at work in this food industry that we all need to be aware of, and how we're relating to each other in that spiritual level. Such beautiful stories. We really thank you, Jessamyn, for being here today.
Thanks,
Lila. And I think
that's
it's
wonderful.
yes. And I want to encourage people. Next week on Wednesdays with Willa, I will have as my guest Colin Bates, and he's a spiritual medium from the UK, and we will be talking about healing grief through mediumship. Such great shows to look forward to, and I encourage you to look at the archive videos of past shows that you can find here on my Facebook page, Willa White Medium, and also on my YouTube channel. If you look up Willa White, you should be able to find me and follow and like and share and all that good stuff. So thank you so much for being here today, Jessamyn. What a lovely, lovely sharing. We appreciate it so much. You be well, everyone, and have a beautiful day. Make it special and infuse your life with the special spiritual essence that has been shared today. Bye-bye.